Len, you and I are here at the Deer, and literally at the Deer, because it's not just John Deere. We're here with something that looks like an ad for Hartford Insurance, but we are at the Deer in front of the clubhouse here at TPC Deer Run.
Yeah, you know, I tell you, I think we've got to do more and more of these things on site, but I can't think of a better way to start it off than right here at the John Deere Classic, where we're have the only annual PGA Tour event in Illinois, and it's back after a year of absence on its 50th anniversary. So this is a pretty special day and a pretty special broadcast.
Yep, and within a few minutes, we're looking forward to our good friend Craig DeVries, the longtime Quad City writer who did the 50th anniversary book of the tournament, coming out here to join us. And Len, I've had a chance to kind of skim the book a little bit, but a lot of great history in there. And if people have a chance to purchase the book, they definitely should.
You know, that was a funny thing. I got my copy yesterday, and Craig was gracious enough to sign it, and I've been to this tournament an awful lot over the years. I thought I knew everything there was to know about the John Deere Classic, but I was really wrong, because Craig has a lot of anecdotal material there, a lot of behind-the-scenes information that never worked my way in, but it certainly enhances my appreciation of the tournament.
Well, Len, it's nice to see the sights and sounds. There's very few places that you and I have been able to record the podcast with the Whitey's air-conditioned truck here, keeping the ice cream cold behind us. And they do have a special flavor for this year, sort of the, I'm going to call it the green, kind of yellow or green and gold colors of John Deere have been incorporated into some ice cream that I've already sampled. It's really good.
Well, you know, I tell you, I haven't had that yet, and you're a bigger ice cream guy, but the first meal that I had upon arrival Thursday, and it was still before lunchtime, it was a pork chop sandwich, the trademark of the tournament. And I think I'll have a few more before it's all over.
Yeah, well, the pork chop sandwich was down here, I think, even before it made its way up to Cog Hill for a couple of years during the Western Open era, but always really a good little treat to be enjoyed championship week. Len, you know what? As we're here this week, we have seen some great play from one of our former neighbors in Arlington Heights. Doug Gim is off to a great start, 9 under par, and was in the top 10 just about an hour ago as the morning flight was finishing. And it was great to see Doug play well. I followed him for 4 holes this morning. He had great birdie looks on 15, 16, 17, and 18. He made 2 out of 4. I know, you know, every golfer will tell you there's at least one that got away, and Doug probably would like that 3.5, 4 footer back on 17. That turned from a birdie into a par, but nonetheless, he's playing well again.
You know, I tell you, I was very impressed with Doug yesterday. He, not so much the score, I mean, we know he can capable of shooting good numbers, and he had 66 in the first round. But afterwards, the conversation was a very lengthy interview with Doug, and he was very well spoken, very much a guy who's been learning his way around the inner workings of being a PGA Tour player. Being a PGA Tour rookie isn't easy, but Doug has made some steady progress. I mean, he led the Players' Championship. He played in the last group of the Players' Championship with the eventual winner, Justin Thomas, and poor Doug shot 78 that day. But he told us how it affected him, and he certainly bounced back from it. So, I think he's in for a good year. He's in right now. He's easily qualified for the FedEx Cup playoffs. And he's already made $1.1 million in a rookie year, so big things are ahead for that young guy.
Yeah, I think so. He really looked solid today as I watched him on several holes. And, you know, he stands out there in the 18th fairway, you know, kind of like about the place you and I would be, you know, like John Deere Classic Media Day. And the pin is tucked in the right front corner, and behind it there's a flagpole with a John Deere flag. And his caddy says, just shoot for the John Deere flagpole. Next thing you know, Doug Gim is in there 9-10 feet from the stick and rolls in a beautiful putt birdie to finish the day.
Well, you know, he's aware, as probably everybody is here, that this is a tournament where you have to go low. You know, Steve Stricker was under par yesterday, and he was in 76th place in danger of missing the cut going into round two. Every score pretty well has to be into the 60s and mid-60s, really. I remember 1 year, 27 under par, Michael Kim won. That's the record. They're not always that low. You've got to shoot low to win the John Deere.
Yeah, you sure do. And, you know, it's just amazing the amount of birdies that are being made out here. And, of course, you know, that's always a good thing with this tournament, Len, because one of the great things about the John Deere Classic is the charity arm of this event. And, you know, people can just pledge general amounts now. But for many years, what really built this program was birdies for charity, and people pledged whatever money they wanted to. It could be a penny, could be a dollar, $10, whatever. And that money was multiplied based on the amount of birdies that were made in the four rounds of the tournament at first. Later, they added the Pro-Am day to that. But, you know, this championship for this size of these communities, they sure do raise a lot of money, and one of the biggest amounts on the PGA Tour.
You know, it's the most impressive thing to me with the John Deere Classic, the charity arm of it, is that this last year, the tournament was able to gather $12.2 million for charity, and they didn't have a tournament to play in. No ball was hit. They did it through giving from over 400 charities were benefiting from this. So it's a wonderful program here. It's a tournament that has had its ups and downs early on, but now it's one of the most solid events on the whole tour.
Well, they have a great sponsor in John Deere. That contract is locked up yet for several more years. You know, we were talking about Doug Gim because he's one of our locals, but there are a couple other locals out here. Kevin Streelman is out here, the Wilson staffer. And also, speaking of Wilson, we have Mark Wilson out here, too. Unfortunately, he's got the last tee time of the day, and we're not sure some of those final groups are going to get in before they get a few raindrops on their head today. But you know what? It is nice to see these guys play. I'm not sure. Did you catch up with Kevin at all yesterday? And or our University of Illinois alum, who's also happens to be that Ryder Cup captain, Steve Stricker as well.
Stricker, yes. Streelman, no. Kevin's struggling. Like Steve, he's struggling. The two, probably the best two well-known players from our Illinois collections are not the best in this tournament at the moment right now. Streelman was still way past the cut line. Him and Stricker are actually kind of having a battle for who's going to be the better of the two, and neither one of them is likely to make the cut the way things stand now. There's a lot of holes left for both of them, though, so, you know, hope springs eternal, but neither had a very good first day.
I think our friend D.A. Points from Pekin, Illinois is out there as well, and I think he needs a few more birdies to stay for the weekend as well.
Yeah, and we also have a couple of collegians making their PGA Tour debut, and Michael Fiegels from Illinois and David Perkins from Illinois State. They were kind of down in the standings after round one, but they're getting a very valuable experience playing in a big event like this. So I'm sure it's a great thrill for both of them.
Well, Len, you know, it's amazing how this golf course, you know, other than a few minor tweaks, I mean, there's been a couple of tee boxes added over the years, but we've seen some of these TPC facilities around the country. The tour comes in for a few years, there's a couple tournaments, and the next thing you know, the place is getting blown up, they're redoing this, they're changing bunkers, they're doing a whole lot of things, and really a lot has not been done to the TPC Deer Run Golf Course since D.A. Wibring finished it and gave the keys to the John Deere Classic.
Yeah, you know, the only real, I would call it, significant change was when they were able to acquire a little extra land and stretched out the par 5 fifth hole. They dropped the tee pretty far back. They needed a little length then, so it was a boost for the course. But otherwise, the maintenance has been excellent. I mean, every player here would say, you know, the course is in excellent, perfect condition. Every year, you never hear a complaint about that. Superintendent Alex Studeman does a wonderful job. But you're right, this is a tournament now. It's and of course now that is very well broken in. A great buy for people who want to come out and play here. It's open to the public. It's one of the few PGA Tour courses that are. Of course, it's obviously proven to be a great tournament site.
Well, Len, we mentioned earlier in the podcast he was going to join us, and we are thrilled to have longtime Quad Cities writer and the author of the brand new 50-year anniversary book for the John Deere Classic, Craig DeVries, with us. Craig, it's nice to see you, and we had to drag you out of your press room on the porch where they've usually sentenced you to, so you can enjoy a good cigar while you're writing.
They won't let me stink up the room, so it's always great to see you in Lenny here, you two of the true friends of the John Deere Classic from the Windy City.
Well, I know Len and I have enjoyed coming out here, both of us, over 30 years and have seen this tournament grow into what it is. And, you know, there was some people outside the press room talking about the history of this tournament. And they said, you know, it's amazing, some of the major markets, they can't get a PGA Tour event. You know, bigger cities, or even in Chicago now, we get it once every 2-3 years, something like that.
Well, there was a really wise and fairly charming, and not especially good looking, but charming golf scribe from Chicago who once dubbed this the golf capital of Illinois.
I wonder who that guy was.
What
a great guy, though.
Lenny Zeem. We love him.
Craig, when was your first John Deere?
1984. I came aboard.
It was Hardee's, that right?
No, it was still the light Quad Cities Open at that point. That was just happened to be the year that one of the five near-death moments for the John Deere Classic, when the board took a vote on whether to declare bankruptcy. It tied at 9-9, and they went out and appealed to the public via phone banks nightly for a matter of months to try to collect upwards of $90,000 to help alleviate some what turned out to be $150,000 worth of debt, kind of collected over the years, starting with the Ed McMahon Opens when Ed would come here and throw a great party, but they weren't cheap parties. So.
Well, Craig, you've seen this tournament go from light to Hardee's food. You know,
Miller High Life was the first name Miller Brewing Company put on. Miller was in, but they were not in for they were in for a penny, not for a pound. And so those were lean years, especially in the Quad Cities, as the farm economy was kind of taking a hit. A lot of jobs went away in the Quad Cities, even though the economy was not at its strongest. Volunteers here worked feverishly and tirelessly and determinedly to keep the event around. It's just a tribute, really, to the can-do makeup, the roll up your sleeves and get it done, DNA of the Quad Cities that this tournament was around and still around in 1996 when a great idea came together in John Deere and the PGA Tour joined forces.
What do you know about that meeting that apparently happened on a Sunday one year at the Quad City Classic? The Tour got involved, John Deere got involved.
It was actually in May of 1996. The tournament was in pretty dire straits, and the tournament director, Tony Piazzi at that time, was looking out for his family, and he saw the writing on the wall. He actually called in his two employees, Sally Walbert and Vicki McWhorter, and told them that they want to get their resumes in order because things were looking pretty grim. Tony left and got a job with the San Antonio Tournament and the San Antonio Golf Association. Kim Huffam came in as tournament director, and they went down to, he and Todd Nicholson and Dave Engstrom, who was a future chair, went down to the tournament players tournament, where tournaments gathered for meetings, played a round of golf with Duke Butler, who was then the tournament liaison for the tour. At Pontevedra, he told them, you know, Kim, I've got my finger on the pulse of the John Deere, the Quad Cities Open, and it's not beating very strong. They decided that that one last appeal to Deere & Company was in order, and a meeting was scheduled in May of that year. Duke has amazing recall, and in the book, the story is told through his eyes, where they sat down over sticky buns, and he laid out reasons why made an appeal to Deere to step up from its role at that time as a presenting sponsor into full title sponsorship. Now, Deere's a Fortune 150 company for a reason, and one of those reasons is they don't make deals like that just based on their conviction that keeping the Quad Cities community strong and giving their employees quality of life is the sole reason to step up and spend the kind of money that it takes to invest in a tour sponsorship. The meeting was about to end when, in fact, they were on their feet, as Duke tells it, when the Deere folks told them that, you know, we really appreciate you coming here. This is the first time the tour has been to Deere headquarters, but we really we don't know that we can do what you're asking us to do, with the fear that if we were to sponsor this tournament and it were to go away, Deere would have a black eye in the community. And Duke said at that point, well, I can think of two reasons why we wouldn't leave. The first would be we could build a TPC golf course in the Quad Cities that would host the tournament. We could make Deer Golf and Turf equipment the official equipment of the TPC network. And at that point, Bob Combs and Claire Peterson and the folks in the room from Deer said, well, why don't you sit down? Let's talk about this a little bit further. And from there, the agreement was put together. They announced it in April of 1997. And TPC Deer Run opened in 2000. And John Deere sponsorship has been clearly one of the strongest on tour. It's now the third longest running title sponsorship relationship in the currently on tour, and it's just been a great relationship. And the revelation for me in researching the book was the amazing ways and creative ways that John Deere, that Deere & Company, has been able to leverage the tournament sponsorship for business reasons that really helped them grow their bottom line. And one of those is leveraging the golf and turf relationship now in Europe. In 2019. The Monday Pro-Am was included six representatives of golf courses from across the Europe and that region to come in and take a look at Deer Golf and Turf equipment and grow the European Golf and Turf division across the pond. They've been looked at by courses that are on the British Open Rota, including St. Andrews. And so it's just been a great business proposition for Deere, because Deere has made it work. They've branded this tournament the John Deere Classic for 23 years, and it's just grown, and it's become just a great community event and a strong business brand for John Deere. And it's just, it continues to grow. But the economy, the way it is in the wake of the pandemic, there's no guarantees, but the current contract runs through 2023. And if Deere & Company is looking for reasons to re-up the agreement, they'll find them, because it's been a great proposition for them.
Craig, what does it say about this tournament that it's been managed well? You mentioned Tony Piazzi, and he left here and he landed on his feet in Texas. And Kim Huffam came in and did a great job.
Won himself a job at the Wells Fargo Championship, which at the time was the single largest purse outside of a major championship or a WGC tournament, and continues to be one of the best events on tour.
Yeah, and then you have Claire Peterson now, who 2 years ago when we sat here with Claire in the lunchroom and we talked to him about this tournament, admitted to us that other tournaments tried to lure him away from the Quad Cities. He was recruited to leave, and he has stayed here, but it seems like every championship manager that you have had at this tournament, as far back as anybody can remember, they do such a great job here that other tournaments are coming after them, trying to steal them and get them to bigger markets.
You know, when Kim moved on to Charlotte, hiring Claire was a masterstroke, because he came from Deere's marketing division. He was working as a marketing manager for the golf and turf division at that for a number of years at that point. And that's been a strength of the relationship, in that Claire comes with a clear understanding of John Deere's very, very practiced and very, very careful brand marketing. I mean, to the point where he knows their fonts and every aspect of this of this event now reflects John Deere's commitment to brand and brand management. And Claire is a big piece of that, because he comes from John Deere.
Craig, I've got to ask you. I've been just looking at the print, so to speak, on the letterhead. Sam Allen, who is the CEO here at John Deere for many years, I'm guessing Sam has retired, because there seems to be somebody.
Yeah, John May is a new CEO and president. Deere has kind of a 10-year cycle for chairs. And Sam, he was initially, when Claire moved on, Claire had, in working with Kim, Claire was the tournament liaison from Deere. Sam actually replaced him in that role. And Sam was I'm sure you remember, was a Western Golf Association. He was a Western scholar, played golf at Purdue.
Yep.
Had a strong affinity for this event. And then he passed that down to John May. And, you know, if the stars align again, and the stars always seem to align for this John Deere Classic, magic always seems to happen here.
That's and the nothing, title and of a book I heard.
And nothing runs like a deer that D.A. Wyring, I think, had lobbed out there. Lenny, when you look at the book, as a guy who's written a few books, what stands out about this book that you see about the John Deere Classic?
Well, Craig left out an item about
Z winning a closest Robert to the pin on 16?
Robert Gomez. But that's okay. I can understand that. Now, I tell you, the thing, what I thought I knew this tournament pretty well. And because I've been here a lot of years, I think my first one was the third tournament of the series. But Craig has uncovered a lot of inside information. He's dug up the dirt, in other words. But it's really a good book, and I can't wait to read the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that the strength of the book lies in the long window that I had to put it together. I started on this book in 2015 with a trip up to Des Moines to talk to some of the old hands from Oakwood, the Russ Cochrans and the Willie Woods and the Fuzzy Zellers and the folks that came to Oakwood when it was the Quad Cities event and the Hardy's Golf Classic and the Miller Lite Quad Cities Open, Ed McMahon. It was a mom and pop. It really reflected the Quad Cities in a lot of ways. And although Deer has really put the polish on this event that the modern tour requires, it remains a community event. It remains the fabric of the Quad Cities is imbued in what this thing is. It's a community event in every single way. And you know, as much credit as John Deere and Claire Peterson and the great folks like Kim Huffman and Tony Piazzi deserve for keeping this thing around and helping it grow into what it is, it's all about the volunteers. It's all about the people who were so dedicated to their community and didn't want to let a good thing go away. I had the opportunity to write a long-form feature for the PGAtour.com website this week that kind of spelled out some of the history. You know, we started in the Quad Cities. The Rock Island Independents hosted the first NFL game. The NBA was the Tri-Cities Blackhawks were part of the NBA in its inception. And like a lot of small communities, those teams didn't last. Those relationships didn't last. But the opportunity to have a PGA Tour event here, a Major League PGA Tour event here, was something that kind of grew out of a passion for golf that started with Jack Fleck's 1955 U.S. Open upset of Ben Hogan. The people who love golf started the event, but the people who love the Quad Cities kept it around. And they kept it around because this is such a great thing for the community. And in those early years, they didn't, because they were chasing debt left and right, they weren't able to contribute a lot of money to the community. But when Dean Beeman declared that charity would be the leading money winner on tour, the John Deere Classic found a way to join that effort through Birdies for Charity. The creative thinking of Steve Jacobs, who was the Big Bird, the original Big Bird, he found a way to bring charities in to collect their own, solicit their own donations. And on top of that, all administrative fees were paid for by the tournament and sponsoring Deer entities. And they also, over the course of the past 20-some years, they have grown the bonus fund that puts 10% on top of every donation, 5 to 10% on top of every donation. And the upshot of that is that since 1993, Birdies for Charity has contributed $133 million to the charities in the Quad Cities, 600 and some across the region. And that's just an amazing story. I think Birdies for Charity isn't just one of the great Quad City stories, it's one of the great PGA Tour stories.
Well, Craig, I got to tell you that I think also one of the most important things when you're going to build a golf course that's going to see a PGA Tour, even though PGA players are only going to be here 1 week a year, but you're creating a facility for the public that's going to play it the rest of the year. How much conversation did you have with D.A. Rybring and his vision? You know, there's a lot of great architects who have had good pieces of land to work with, and they haven't gotten it right. And that's why we see courses getting re-renovated after the tour comes 2 or 3 years. Guys don't like it. You got to blow it up. You got to start it again. But DA's vision has held up here for over 20 years.
D.A. Wybring was the, you know, Zach Johnson's been a great partner for the John Deere Classic since 2003 when he got his first sponsor's exemption. But D.A. Wybring was the original Zach Johnson. Zach comes from Cedar Rapids, which is 90 miles north of here. D.A. comes from Quincy, Illinois, which is about an equidistant south of here. And his passion for this event, he won it 3 times. He was a great choice by Tim Fincham to be the player design consultant. His passion for this golf course continues to this day. He was here the day the book arrived at Stonehouse working on bunkers. And so D.A.'s passion for this event and his passion for this golf course and his commitment to this golf course is unparalleled, I think. And what he's put together is a golf course that, while it is among the lowest scoring tracks that the players come across every year, just receive universal praise all the time from the players who come and play this golf course. They love this golf course. Caddies love it a little less because they have to walk up number three, but which is a very it's a hike. It's part of our hill and dale on the Mississippi River kind of terrain.
Craig, you've put a lot of effort and elbow grease into this thing for a couple years, and it probably even longer because of the pandemic and not being able to release it last year. But how do the people get this great read on golf and golf at the professional level here in the state of Illinois?
They can write on the front page on the on the top of JohnDeereClassic.com. There's a place where you can click and buy the book. And
they'll send it to you.
They'll send it to you. And it's it's a great story. I take very little credit for what it is because the story told itself. Just a great story of a community committed to keeping a major league event in a minor league community. And I know that in Chicago, people maybe look over here and go, well, why do they have an annual event when we don't? It's because people care about their community, and it's because they care about this event. I was so privileged to be able to tell this story. Somebody like Len could have told it better, but I was the lucky one. I was born in East Moline, which, by the way, is one of the Quad Cities. It says so right on the signs. It's spelled out in the book. Ed McMahon used to have to go back to Burbank every year and try to explain to Johnny Carson why the Quad Cities were actually five cities. And I just say that we were prescient because you look at the at the Big Ten now with its 14 teams.
Yeah.
You know, the Quad Cities was ahead of its time.
Well, you know what, Craig? When they say Quad Cities, you got Rock Island, you got Moline, you got East Moline, and now we have Silvis. So well, isn't there a Quad Cities right here on this side of the river?
Silvis is a suburb of East Moline. Let's don't forget that. It's East Moline, Silvis are joined at the hip. The Quad Cities, the Quad Cities were joined by a river. Davenport and Bettendorf are also part of the Quad Cities, and it's it's a community that I think we're a little bit unique. John Deere himself, and this was one of the fun aspects of putting that book together, was researching John Deere the company and John Deere the man. Pretty resilient cat in his own way. He came here from Vermont basically to escape debtor's prison because the economy tanked in Vermont. He had a blacksmith business that he owed money on, and they called in the note, and he couldn't pay it. And so he came here and he invented the steel plow, the farm implement capital of the world, grew up around him. And the Quad Cities that I knew as a kid was a farm implement-based industrial community. My grandfather worked at IH. My uncle worked at John Deere. Neighbors worked at IH or Farmall. There was a connection almost in every home to the farm implement industry. All of which changed in the 1980s when the farm economy kind of fell on its ear, and the IHs went away, the farm malls went away, the cases went away. But John Deere remains. It's still the largest employer in the Quad Cities, and it sponsors a lot of great community events. Most prominently now, the John Deere Classic.
Well, Len and Craig, we are out of time for this week. Len, any final thoughts? I know you're looking forward to doing the next
edition. It's a 179 book, a nine-page book. I've got so much more to tell you.
He's got a lot to say. I've used that line.
Well, you're looking forward to the next edition live from Eagle Ridge.
Absolutely. I'm at Eagle Ridge beginning on Monday and meeting Mark Klausner, the new owner there, which I'm looking forward to that. So, and see what they've done to the general course, and it's been an exciting few weeks here back in Chicago. It's been good. We'll be back in later in the fall.
Well, for Len Ziem, Craig DeVries, the author of the John Deere Classic 50-year book, I'm Rory Spears. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you'll listen in again next week, too.